All right, welcome in everyone to the deep dive. We're diving into a really just a really fascinating case today, one that's particularly relevant for all the law students out there, especially anyone who's thinking about focusing on juvenile justice or even broader just due process issues. The case is MTV State, and it comes from the Indiana Court of Appeals back in 2010.
Yeah, it's a really important one. I mean, this case really kind of highlights some of the core principles about how, the state interacts with minors in the legal system, and especially during those, kind of crucial probation modification hearings.
Yeah, I mean that's really where the heart of this case lies. And the question we're going to be grappling with today is, can a juvenile court, actually order a minor to detention, for alleged probation violations, but without, and here's the kicker, without the state actually presenting any evidence to back up those allegations?
Right, and it almost sounds unbelievable, right? Like, how could that possibly happen? But that's why we're here to unpack this case and really delve into what happened here, the facts, the legal issues, what the court ultimately decided and the reasoning behind it. And we're going to be drawing on a few different sources for this, some legal podcast guidance, a really clear case brief, and then a standard legal brief as well.
Okay, so paint the picture for us. What's the background here? Who's MT? And what led up to this whole situation?
So MT was a minor, and he was on probation for an offense that, if he were an adult, would have been considered criminal trespass.
Okay.
And one of the conditions of his probation was that he had to complete a treatment program at a place called Kokomo Academy.
Got it. So far, pretty standard probation stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. It all seems pretty straightforward at this point. But then, things start to get a little more complicated because the probation department later comes forward and says, "Hey, MT's actually violated his probation, and we've got four specific instances, of how he did that." So these alleged violations included things like skipping school, and also breaking the rules at this Kokomo Academy facility where he was supposed to be getting treatment.
Okay, so four specific allegations. So you'd think, okay, now the state's going to lay out some evidence, some proof that these things actually happened, right? I mean, that's how it's supposed to work.
Right, you would think so, right? But here's where it gets really interesting and also, kind of concerning. At the actual probation modification hearing, the state didn't present any evidence at all to back up these four alleged
Hold
violations.
on, wait, what? They just accused him, but offered no documents, no witness testimony, nothing.
Nothing. It's really striking. And instead of offering proof for these, initial allegations, the state decided to introduce testimony about a totally separate incident that happened on May 14th. This involved MT being restrained by staff at the academy. But here's the thing. This May 14th incident wasn't one of the four original probation violations that they were even there to talk about.
Okay, so let me get this straight. They accuse him of four specific things, offer zero proof, and then bring up this completely unrelated incident, like as some kind of justification for changing his probation. And even with this total lack of evidence for the actual allegations, the juvenile court decided to go ahead and order MT's commitment to the Department of Correction. I mean, that just screams due process violation, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very troubling, and it really raises some serious questions about the fairness of the process. And that's precisely what the Indiana Court of Appeals had to grapple with. The central legal issue here is, does due process require the state to actually present evidence of alleged probation violations at a juvenile modification hearing before a court can, make a change to the juvenile's disposition and order a commitment? I mean, it seems pretty fundamental, right?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a no-brainer. Like, of course you need evidence to justify taking away someone's freedom, even if they're a minor. But the fact that this even went to the appellate level tells us that maybe not everyone saw it that way. So what did the Indiana Court of Appeals say? Like, what was their answer to this really important question?
They were very clear. They said, yes, due process absolutely requires the state to present evidence to back up those probation allegations in these kinds of hearings. And so they reversed the lower court's decision.
Okay, so they basically slapped down the juvenile court and said, "Hey, you can't just rely on accusations to lock a kid up." But what was their reasoning? Like, what was the legal basis for their decision?
Well, the court's reasoning really boils down to those fundamental guarantees of fairness and due process that, you know, are so central to our legal system. And these principles apply even in juvenile proceedings. They emphasize that, yeah, juvenile courts do have a lot of leeway. They operate under this doctrine of parens patriae, which means the state is acting as a parent, trying to do what's best for the child.
Right.
But this broad discretion, it doesn't give them a free pass to ignore basic constitutional protections. The court actually said, and this is a really important quote, "The due process clause applies in juvenile proceedings while ensuring fundamental fairness."
So the idea of the state acting as a parent, while important in the juvenile system, it doesn't trump a juvenile's right to due process. That's a really key point. So what specific due process rights for juveniles did the court highlight in its decision?
They pointed to a bunch of key rights, the right to get clear notice of the allegations against them, the right to have a lawyer, the right to not incriminate themselves, and this was really important in this case, the right to confront and question any witnesses who are testifying against them.
Okay, so those are all crucial elements of a fair process, right? But how did the lack of evidence in this case for those alleged probation violations actually affect MT's ability to use those rights? Like, what was the practical consequence of that?
Well, because the state didn't show any proof for those four violations, MT was basically left with nothing to challenge. He couldn't really confront witnesses or defend himself because there was nothing concrete to respond to. It's like, you know, trying to fight a shadow. The court made it clear that to change a juvenile's disposition, especially to the point of locking them up, you need evidence of a specific act they did during their probation that actually violates the rules. They even said, mere allegations are insufficient. Evidence must show probable cause.
Yeah. That's a powerful statement. You can't just say someone messed up. You got to prove it. Now, what about that testimony about the May 14th restraint incident? I mean, even if it wasn't part of the original allegations, couldn't the court have still used that as a reason to change his probation?
That's where the court drew a really important line. They said, no, that testimony doesn't count because that restraint incident wasn't one of the four violations that MT was originally accused of. Even if they found that incident to be problematic, it wasn't what this hearing was about. They were very specific in saying that any changes to a juvenile's probation have to be based on a proven violation of the specific terms of their probation. That unrelated incident, no matter how concerning it might have been, didn't meet that standard.
So it's almost like the state tried to switch the whole reason for the hearing, like midway through, from those original four allegations to this totally different event. And MT had no warning, no chance to prepare to address it.
Exactly. And that's why these due process protections are so crucial. They're there to guarantee fairness and prevent the state from just acting on a whim, even when dealing with kids.
Okay, so let's zoom out for a second and think about the bigger picture. What are the key takeaways from MTV State? Like, what's the big legal lesson here, especially for all the aspiring lawyers listening in?
The biggest takeaway is that due process rights aren't just for adults. They apply at every single stage of the juvenile justice process, including these probation modification hearings. The court was very firm on that point. They said, fundamental fairness is non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the juvenile system is supposed to be more focused on rehabilitation, helping kids get back on track, it can't just ignore the Constitution.
So it's a constant balancing act. You're trying to do what's best for the child, but you still have to respect their rights.
Absolutely. That's the challenge. The state has a real interest in protecting kids and guiding them, but their power isn't unlimited. The Constitution sets those boundaries. And this case is a really important reminder of that. The other big takeaway is about the evidence needed to change someone's probation. This case makes it clear that just having suspicions or allegations isn't enough. You need actual proof. The court even quoted an earlier case that said, evidence must be presented from which the trial judge could reasonably conclude there is probable cause to believe the defendant violated a criminal law. So even with probation violations, you need a certain level of evidence before you can take away someone's freedom.
So for all the future lawyers out there, if you're representing a juvenile in one of these hearings, what does this case mean for you? Like, what's the practical takeaway?
It means you got to be on your toes. You got to demand that the state shows real, solid evidence to back up any alleged violations. Don't assume the court's just going to take the probation officer's word for it or rely on some vague accusations. MTV State is very clear that assertions alone aren't enough to justify changing a kid's probation, especially if it means locking them up. You got to hold the state's feet to the fire and make them prove their case.
All right, so to wrap this all up, what's the core message we should be taking away from our deep dive into MTV State?
The core message is that MTV State is a crucial reminder that due process doesn't just disappear when you're dealing with juveniles. It applies to every aspect of the juvenile justice process, including these probation modification hearings. That means any decision to change a kid's probation, especially one that restricts their freedom, has to be based on solid evidence of a real violation, not just some unproven claims.
Yeah, that's really important to remember. This case really highlights how complicated it is to uphold fundamental rights within a system that's supposed to be focused on helping kids. So as you all continue your legal journey, think about this. How do those rehabilitative goals of the juvenile justice system, how do they interact with, and sometimes maybe even clash with, those constitutional guarantees of due process? What are the ongoing challenges in trying to balance those two really important principles in the real world of juvenile law? That's something to really chew on. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
Thanks, everyone.
We'll catch you next time.